Session number 14983, Albert Shippen, Reel 15.
Mr. Shippen, Reel 15. What was Dortmund like in 1949-50 when you were there, Mr. Shippen?
Well, you can imagine it would have been in the Ruhr. It had had a terrific pounding both from the air and from the advancing armies by artillery fire and everything. It was a steel town, and with Bochum and associated areas around there in the Ruhr, it was very industrialized. It was a town that had relied mostly on steel, and the people there were much of anti-British from square one, and there was a tremendous lot of anti-British feeling there. In fact, at that stage, the Communist Party were rather strong, and there was logos on many of the buildings, Tommy Go Home. I think that a lot of the German civilians tolerated this because they were employed by the British, and they did many of the tasks in the barracks. Also down at what we call Camp 7, where there was a naffy shop. And at that stage, something rather unique in our service life cropped up. We had married families, which was the first time that the battalion had married families. And, of course, they were living a life of luxury. They had everything at the beck and call. In fact, you got... you could have a maid. I think it was for about something like about 10 shillings a month. And we had yacht clubs, and we had cycling clubs. As I say, we lived a very palatial life in that sense of having the families there, whereas the social activities were out of this world, because on our right of the barracks, we had the 40th Field Regiment, which was quite a considerable artillery unit, and with plenty of warrant officers and sergeants in, who had activities going all the time. And on our left was the 10th Anti-Tank Regiment. And if I can give you a laugh on this one, one evening about half a dozen or so of us, who were single members at that time, lived in the science mess, went along to a social evening in the 10th Anti-Tank Regiment. And Housey Housey, or Tom Bowler as it was known as in the British Army, was being played in the sergeant's mess. And there was an accumulator running on. And one of the sergeants, who was absolute character, a chap called Geordie D, who actually ended up a lieutenant colonel quartermaster, happened to win this ongoing prize, which was substantial. So being a true Geordie, we stood at the bar and said to the waiters, give everybody a drink, which they did do, but us six or so Geordies got out of the van and started to sing DLI songs and all the rest of it. After a while, the regimental sergeant major came up and said, gentlemen, I think you've outstayed your welcome. Of course, the artillery were quite annoyed that we'd won this chap had won this considerable amount of money. So we all stood to attention and said, yes, sir. Anyway, the chap that won the money, as I say, was an absolute character, and stood smartly to attention and said, sir, and the RSM said, yes, sergeant. He says, I've got news for you. He says, what's that, sergeant? He says, we've been thrown out of better messes than this. We've been thrown out of our own. I can assure you that every telephone was ringing between the 10th Anti-Tank and the 1 DLI to tell us to come and escort us back to our own barracks. But on the other hand, as I say, we had education was available at all levels. We had cycling clubs, and we had local leagues. We went to the island of Buckham, the Band and Bugles, and lived in a very palatial hotel, which even in those days had a swimming pool with a wave maker in it. We also went off to Winterberg skiing. We went up in the Alps Mountains to the Mona Z Dams. As I say, life was very pleasant. Anyway, like everything else in the army, the tide changed. We had many exercises to do, and we did the majority of them at a place called Sennelager, which was a huge German training area. We did the British Army, the Rhine, did training on that area, so it'll tell you how huge it was. And we also went up to on the Belgian border to a place called Vogelsang and did training there with the Belgian Army. We also did exchanges with the American Army. We were then at some point or other put onto an internal security duty at a place up in Brunswick. There was the Aaron Goren factory, which had a number of manufacturing processes in being. And what the British were doing, particularly the British local government, as it was called at then days and that, were taking out machinery on reparations. Now this, when you look back in hindsight, was a stupid thing to pay in reparations, because some of this machinery had been working for years and years. It pulled it in the German productivity during the war. And also, as they took these out, they were also shipping them back to England. And of course, when they broke down, there was no spare parts for them. So then all we were doing was moving scrap. And at the Aaron Goren factory, there was a lot of what we would term in these days as slave labour had accumulated. And, of course, a lot of these people at that point had been probably waiting to be repatriated or whatever has happened to them for the last 4 or 5 years, were getting very restless. So we were sent from Dortmund up to Brunswick to carry out this internal security exercise. And it was near the Russian border kind of thing, which they controlled in Germany. So it was obviously a political move to quieten these people down. We were up there for 6 weeks, and what we did was we give them the impression that there was a mass of troops, because one day we'd go out dressed in full battle order. The next day would be companies would be out in the PT kit. The next day would be out riding on the back of vehicles and this kind of thing. We confused them all by, instead of being a battalion or part of a battalion on internal security, they got the impression that there was thousands and thousands of us about. We also did many exercises, and one in particular I remember. The Rhine Army did an exercise. Schinwel was the Minister of War. And he came across and took the salute. The Band and Bugles were put into a mass band. And I think, if I remember rightly, there was about 700 people took part in this band. And by some quirk or other, was appointed the senior bugle major over the heads of all the drum majors and that was present at the time. So I led the mass bands on this parade, And we marched past a saluting base and then wheeled off. And then all of these people taking part in the exercise on transport or guns or whatever there was at that time came past the saluting base, and we played, I would think, for something like about an hour and a half to 2 hours while this parade went past. And then everybody went off, the band went off back to barracks, because their job during these exercises was to defend the barracks and particularly make security arrangements and that for the married families, to see about evacuating them and making sure everything was all right. Well, we went off to carry out the 10-day exercise in the situation. But I must say it was very pleasant soldiering in Dortmund compared to the times we'd spent in Greece.
What was the... You talked about the unfriendliness of the Germans. Was there any signs at this stage even that there was support for Hitler? Had it gone, or were there any signs of it?
Well, when you talk to them as individuals, they all fought on the Eastern Front, never against us. They were either stretcher bearers or non-combatants, which was rather strange. But, of course, the supply of civilian labour was run from the Ratskeller, their town hall, and was run through these reparations that was going on. And I must say, looking back on it, I mean, the houses and that some of our people lived in were very palatial. And of course, the Germans quite willingly said, yeah, get on with it. I mean, you could ring up them, say, General of 2nd Div, which we were in those days, the Cross Key Division, was coming to inspect 1DLI. You could get something like about 20 or 30 labourers sent off to you to dig all the gardens, do all the whitewashing and this kind of thing. But of course, that was against reparations, which they did. And of course, we had palatial sports fields. We had a big cinema and a big, huge naffy shop and everything down in Camp 7 with all its facilities. Outside the barracks, we had a huge canteen which served the three regiments were there at the time, called the Stunk Club. And this was all under reparations. So, I mean, it was quite, as I say, a very palatial kind of existence there.
Was the town city being rebuilt at this stage?
Oh yes, when you go and down there, I mean employment was mainly for the Germans, and they were cannibalised and everything. I mean, the bricks and this kind of thing, and the roads, the trams were being refurbished and all this kind of stuff. And what amazed us more than anything else was you could get on a tram, would you believe, in the centre of Dortmund, and go probably 50, 60 miles up to Iserlohn or something like that on a tram. Of course, one of the main things with the Germans again was they were turning out the Volkswagen Beetles at a fair rate of knots. And of course, they were used extensively by the families with the German drivers. They just used to ring into the motor pool and say, we want to go to so-and-so, so-and-so, and off would go one of these little German Beetle cars and everything and take the families to wherever. If you're going out to a concert or a social evening, some other regiment and that, and they had that. Buses which did exactly the same. We visited many units 20, 30 miles away.
Could you move around the town safely?
Well, I would think you could, as long as you weren't in uniform, because at that stage there was authority that you could wear civilian clothes. But then again, you were identified quite quickly, even in civilian clothes, being British against what the Germans wore. But the majority of troops that was in that locality at that time, I would say, were, to look for a better word for them at the moment, were national servicemen or men undergoing emergency duration service in this county. We had a lot of young chaps, and I remember we had a lot of domestic problems with these young chaps coming from England for the first time, meeting up with these Fräuleins, and of course it was a method of getting out of Germany by marrying someone. So these young lads used to come out to Germany, probably indulging courtship for the first time in their lives. I think it was the greatest thing since sliced bread. Put an application in to get married, and before you knew where you are, you had a domestic problem on your hand. So unofficially, mind you, even at battalion level, once you got one of these young emergency soldiers who were, I say, just over 18 or so, coming in and applying for to be married, obviously we carried out the procedure, and then if a draft was going out to the Far East, because we were supplying drafts then to the KYLI in Burma, nine times out of ten he found himself on the draft.
It must have been a difficult one, because you wouldn't know for certain, even if the soldier's parents knew that he wanted to marry a German lady.
Well, yes, and not only that, the, if we didn't do an official record, but we often talked about this at reunions in this county, and I think we could safely say, I think we were in Dortmund somewhere around about just over a year before we went to Berlin, and I would think we could safely say that there wasn't more than five or six blokes actually returned and married the German girls. But I would say, you know, probably in the year or so we were in Dortmund, we must have had over 100 applications or so.
So was the policy to refuse the wedding or that time, or move them away, as you say? And obviously those that really did want to marry, when they went back home, would come back for the German girls. Was this the process?
Well, it was, but it was unofficial. It was a kind of a nod and a wink kind of thing amongst them, because these young lads at that stage or something, they didn't know their own minds. And, I mean, some of these girls were really whirly wildy, you know, knew the way around town, where these guys didn't. And, of course, the thing about it was that at other units, obviously, that had been in the area and all, being in BOR, had experienced problems with the domestic kind of situation. I remember one day I was sat in the office acting as the sergeant major when one of the signal platoon chaps arrived with his wife, German wife, and the baby, and said he had to bring her in because the child was they hadn't any accommodation. She was stopping with their mother and so forth and that, and the child was sleeping in a drawer, kind of thing. So of course we had to send him to the padre and all the rest of it. But as I said, those kind of things were cropping up by these young lads being married, and the majority of these domestic things and that we got problems had been from units like the KYLI had been up in northern Germany at a place called Lüneburg, and of course it had been dispatched off to Malaya. We had really enforced it, but the chaps that hadn't sufficient time and all this kind of thing had been posted into us, so we got their domestic problems pushed onto us, and this is where of course the procedure, we learned the procedure quite quickly by taking on other people's problems.
Were there many problems with prostitution and VD within the battalion?
Well, we had the usual guardroom facility there, which was called the ET room, where if you went out, you went into a small private room, and you got a French letter, and there was a cream and this kind of thing, and carbolic soap and everything and that, to wash yourself and that. And, of course, when you came back in, you carried out the procedure laid down, and it was slips of paper and that there, and all you did was write your number on a slip of paper, and that showed that you'd carried out the ET procedure, early treatment procedure, to avoid VD or any of complaints in that line. And of course, if you did contract VD, you didn't get put on a charge for self-inflicted wounds, where if you didn't carry out the ET procedure, you got charged, and nine times out of ten you got 28 days detention. Oh yes, we had it was another thing which you couldn't disguise, because I think it was on a Thursday when you were Sergeant Major, you published your company detail for the night. And obviously you put on, the following personnel will parade the MI room with their small kits at such and such a time and that. And you posted that in the numerous billets under your company authority. And of course, you could, as you walked past, you could hear someone reading that saying, oh, there's so and such a name, I didn't know he had VD. Yes, there was, I don't think it was very prevalent, but in my platoon, I had about 26 men or something in the bugle section in this canning, and I had two members of the bugle section that had VD, yes.
Were there brothels in the city?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Well, you could go down to the Autobahn, sorry, the Strasserbahn and this kind of thing, and the Bahnhof, which is the station, and this kind of thing, and there you see all the guys hanging around, because they'd never experienced this in Britain. It was somewhat unique for these young lads. And as I say, there was all sorts of programs to keep them away from that kind of environment while they were stationed in Germany.
Were the brothels out of bounds, or were there any
official
ones?
Oh, no. They were all out of bounds, oh, yes. They had the cartwheel sign on. Everything had the cartwheel sign on in that. And see, in some bars even, they had the cartwheel sign on. And the CMPs were quite active.
The cartwheel was an out of bounds sign?
Yeah. It was, as soon as you saw this cartwheel, that was an out of bounds area. Distinguished immediately.
Was there much trouble between the troops, battalion, and the German local population, going out into the town, into the bars and drinking and so forth?
Oh, yes, there was usually very, mostly on a pay night, a Thursday night, yes. I remember one night even, the Sergeant's Mess members used to visit a local Keller bar, and the chap behind it was called Willie Gockles, and we used to go down there, and do a considerable amount of drinking in our leisure time. And this night this fight broke out between the Germans and the senior NCOs of the battalion, sergeants and so forth. Man, the CMPs arrived, and they were all arrested and taken. So because it was a CMP charge outside the barracks, it was automatically remanded for commanding officer. And these two guys in particular, this guy I told you won the money, called him Geordie D, was an absolute character. And the other chap was called Tommy Chadwick, who won the MM, by the way. they both got posted from the battalion because of the bad record they had. But they were absolutely good soldiers. Anyhow, this fight broke out in this Willie Gockles barn. Went in front of the commanding officer, and of course the commanding officer said, well, what have we got to say for yourselves? And said, well, sir, I said, the Germans were quite insulting to the British Army, and we couldn't just stand there, sir, and accept that. And when one of them turned round and said the DLI were no good, sir, no matter what punishment I get, he says, I must accept the punishment, but he says, I couldn't accept what the Germans said about the Durham Light Infantry. He says, so I punched him in the nose, sir. The commander says, quite rightly so as well. So they got admonished. That was it. But the girls were quite free. You didn't have to go to any brothels. You could pick a girl up quite easy, because they wanted a meal or wanted to come into sans mess or this kind of thing. It was, as I say, open house to everyone.
Living conditions within the civilian population would still be pretty harsh after the war.
Oh yes, so, I mean, the accommodation was unbelievable. That's why I say we got domestic troubles, because those houses, a lot of houses which were available now, they've been taken over by the military for to move the families in. I mean, I think at one point we must have had in the battalion, I'd say 600 plus troops. I think when we were in Dortmund, we had about 150 married families with us, which was quite considerable when you consider that the battalion was made up of a very strong consignment of national service people.
So there was great resentment between the civilian population.
Oh yes, I would think, as I say, the unions were very strong in Dortmund, and it may seem as though, you know, the Germans had sorted out the communists. They were very strong in Dortmund, with it being a steel town and heavy industries.
Was the black market flourishing?
Oh yes, yes. I mean, you could keep a girl. If you got your 200 cigarette ration, you could say to her, well, there you are, my dear, 200 cigarettes. She could put them on the black market and keep herself for a week on what she made out of your 200 cigarettes. Coffee was another big thing. Clothing, particularly ladies' clothing, and what have we. It was, you could sell anything to anything and that, and get, you could barter. Yes, I would think somewhere down the line, even at that stage, people were making money.
And troops were involved in this, taking food to civilians or what have you?
Oh, yes. I think once they got a girlfriend or something like that, they would buy their cigarettes and the chocolate and so forth, and get keep the families and that in beam and what have we, yes.
What was the troops' attitude then to the children? Usually they relate pretty well to children.
Oh yes, I think it's like everything else. No matter where you go soldiering, no matter where you're stationed and that, children come along and you see them suffering, you don't hesitate to help them out in any stage or form that you could do that. As I say, it was flourishing. And of course, the other big thing was that the married families had these maids and everything and that, and of course they were a direct link into the black market system as well. I mean, a married family would get its rations from the army, and then of course it could go and buy its rations out of the naffy. And I mean, they would just say to the maids, well, there's a tin of coffee, and because we had our own money in those days in Germany. The British Army had its own, who weren't paid in marks, who were paid in what they called BAFs, British Army currency, or something in that it was called. It was like pressed out plastic, very early plastic kind of system. So if you wanted to go in the town, you had to have marks, the German marks. So people did them on the black market. I mean, you could go and buy a bottle of whiskey in the Sands Mess for about six shilling or something like that, you know, and go and sell it to Willy Gockels, you know, for the equivalent of probably about £5 in German marks.
The money that you had was basically you could only use within the camp and its facilities.
Oh, yes, yeah.
And exchanging an item and then exchanging the item for marks was the way that you got the currency going.
Yes. Mm-hmm.